Welcome to Executive Tools, the Executive Trinity, Chapter 1, Part 2, Why and What. This cast answers these questions. What is the Executive Trinity? Why is the Executive Trinity important? What are the executive's responsibilities in the Executive Trinity? Well, if you want to answer these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Are you in a position where your results are increasingly dependent on the managers beneath you? If so, the Effective Senior Manager Conference will teach you exactly what you need to succeed, how to set direction, how to delegate strategically, and how to drive performance through others. If you're leading leaders, these skills are essential. Find out more about our upcoming events by visiting us at manager-tools.com/ESMC.
Okay, Mark, so last time we talked about the Executive Trinity and what the three systems at a high level.
The derivation of them.
Yeah, and then why they're so important, right? So
right.
Today we're going to get into kind of the details of the Executive Trinity itself, strategy, operations, people, and talk about the manager's tools trinity. Don't forget about that, folks. Still applies. So
yeah, exactly.
Let's get into it. So first one up is strategy.
Yeah. So, Mike, I have had this conversation, I would say 200 times in the last 2 years. I'm not kidding. As we've started doing executive tools and people have been sort of pummeling me a little bit about, okay, what's next and when are you going to do more? And I'm, you know, it's very reminiscent, in my opinion, maybe not yours, I don't know. The experience I'm having with exec tools broadly, and more specifically the Trinity, but mostly exec tools generally, is exactly the same as we had in the first few years of manager tools, where people used to write in and say, I just found you guys. I've listened to your first 50 cast. I listened to them in 2 months, and now I'm disappointed that you're only putting them out once a week. Can you please go to daily? Because of course they had a backlog to work through, right? They had what amount to podcast debt, and they worked through the debt and now they're current and they want more stuff. And I continually get asked about strategy, operations, and people, and probably strategy most of all. Now, we've done some strategy stuff. We had a great cast with Richard Rummelt about good strategy, bad strategy, and the kernel of strategy, and so on. But if we only do one thing in the Executive Trinity part of Executive Tools for our audience, if we can simply demystify strategy, if we can simply tell them, you can do it. Maybe an individual contributor can't do it, but if you're a manager, senior manager, if you're listening to us, if you're listening to Manager Tools, you're somebody who's a learner, who understands, who can learn quickly. Strategy doesn't have to be something somebody else does. In fact, I had a coaching call this morning, and as I told you in our board call earlier, right before this recording, the single best coaching call I've ever had in my life with Krzysztof Babinin, who is in Poland. And we were talking about strategy, operations, and people. And he said, I think I'm really good on people. And then he proved to me that he was, in fact, better than I'd ever heard anyone ever be in terms of the people system. He wanted some help in operations, but then he also says, I don't know anything about strategy. And that's such a fault of organizations that have some strategic process. Now, to be fair, folks, many organizations don't. And if you're a small or mid-sized company, you probably don't. It's probably run by the seat of the pants of the founder or the owner or the chief executive or whatever. But strategy is way too shrouded in mystery for its own good.
Yeah, it's never really articulated their strategy.
No, process, it's not.
Right? Even when it exists, right? So it's not surprising that people would feel a little like they're floundering when it comes to strategy.
And it's a combination of things. Some of the things talked about in strategy, they don't want to get out in the general public. And of course, the strategy developers, they like being part of the strategy inner circle. And so they overplay the whole confidentiality of it and to the point where nobody really knows what's going on. The only way you really maybe would understand strategy is deliverables drip down out of the process upon you. Right? Prepare this report. We need to look at this versus this. And I know we normally ask for country stuff, but now we want region stuff and so on. That's because probably the strategy is changing and you're the one that has the data. And so I'm really excited about talking about strategy, partially so everybody can understand how it works and why it works. And it is totally knowable. It's totally doable. The first time you do it, you won't be that great at it, and that's okay. But it will make you so much better when you finally get to a level where you're included in the strategy group. And unfortunately, the way most executives learn about strategy, other than business school, which is about as dry as it can be and really not powerful, is their first invitation to a strategy session. And they're mute the entire time for fear of being wrong.
Yeah, I was. I remember. It's like, yeah. I felt lost. It's like, what?
Yeah. They were using phrases I didn't understand. So, yeah. All right. So, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that out loud for the 100th time, and I'll continue saying it. Folks, your beliefs about strategy are wrong, and it's not your fault, just like your beliefs about managing were wrong, but it's not your fault. Somebody should be educating you. We're sorry. We're not sorry. It has to be us. We're happy to do it. But this is a core part of what makes successful organizations successful. And it doesn't have to be shrouded in mystery. So I just want to define it. I know this goes without saying, folks, but strategy is the result of the highest level planning for the future of the organization. Strategy is what comes out of a process, and there are many different processes. Strategy is essentially required for large organizations. I remember telling this story, Mike. I don't even remember it. Years ago, I told somebody the story of Walmart was number one in the Fortune 500. Fortune 500, there's all different ways to rank. There's the Forbes list and there's other lists and so on. The Fortune 500 ranks companies by total revenue, just gross revenue, which is funny because I think number four or five was Apple or Microsoft, and Walmart had 10 times the revenue when I remember looking at this a number of years ago, but they had 1/50th of the profits, right? And there are a lot of people who would say profits and EBITDA are much more important. But regardless, Fortune for years has measured companies based on total revenue. And one of the comments in the Fortune article that I was reading back when Fortune was worth reading was that in order to grow at the growth that occurred last year, Walmart would have to add revenues equivalent to the size of a Fortune 20 company. In other words, they'd have to add a company that didn't exist the year before that's
every
now
year
in the top 20. Yeah, exactly. So, folks, if you understand the scale of that, and I think at the time, the number I was looking at for Walmart's revenue was $400 billion. I could be off a little bit on that. That is a monster of an organization. Now, they're very clear on what their mission is and what they're designed to do and so on. But you can't grow as fast as you need to justify your stock price, because generally stocks are a bet on your growth in the future. You can't do that without pretty significant planning. And that planning is called strategy. If you fail to plan for the future, and when I say plan for the future, think strategy, okay? The organization is going to cease to exist. And now you might say, well, wait, they're a $400 billion organization. You know, how would they cease to exist? I'll tell you how. What would happen is they would stop growing, because they didn't have a coherent plan for how to grow, and then the detailed plan to deliver that. And because they stopped growing, their stock price would be hurt. And because their stock price would be hurt, it would be more expensive for them to get capital. When it becomes more expensive to get capital, it becomes more expensive to run your organization. And so what ends up happening is, in some ways, even big companies can become like small companies and realize they have to fund their growth out of their profitability. And so they start cutting costs in order to become profitable again so they can grow again. Unfortunately, some of those costs are associated with revenues as well, and that it's revenues. And we've seen this for the last 100 years.
Most people probably listening don't remember Kodak, but just think about it. Kodak was huge.
They were Apple in photography, yeah. Right?
They died. It took a while, but yeah, sure as anything.
You said it took a while. You're right. It reminds me of Hemingway's comment when somebody asked him, how did he go bankrupt? He says, well, it was gradual for a time, and then it was all of a sudden.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. And look, if the executive team's ultimate responsibility is to ensure the continuation of the organization, and by that you have to continue to grow results to fund future growth, if the organization ceases to exist, all those executives have failed in their roles. The aim of strategy is growth. That's what it is. And the question is growth northwest or northeast or south-southwest? You don't know. And somebody has to decide. And in times like this with AI and so on, it could go from northwest year after year after year to suddenly south or east. You don't know. A good example is Andy Grove when he was leading Intel. I'm actually not sure. I think he was leading Intel, and he was the one that made decisions. They needed to get out of memory chips because memory chips was becoming a failing business because prices were dropping because it had become commoditized. And he got into integrated circuits to the 386 and the 486 and the Pentium, the 586. He got into building the brains of computers rather than just the storage of computers. And it was an enormous bet. I mean, Intel was built to make memory chips. And then suddenly he said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to do something different. It's just like Apple. I know everybody says, yeah, Apple still makes Macintoshes. And I'm recording this on my MacBook Air, which is it's in my top five greatest products in the history of Apple. But Apple wasn't the phone company. But Steve Jobs and leadership figured out that computing was going to go to phones, and they had computing expertise. And so they decided to become a phone company. And you might say, well, they're not really a phone company. They're a lot of things. Trust me, Wall Street thinks they're a phone company. And if the source of your capital thinks you're a phone company, you're a phone company. Now, this brings up another point. And I've said this probably 50 times on air, and I'm going to continue saying it until I'm no longer able to provide you guys guidance and I'm off the podcast at some point in my casket. The biggest thing that I didn't understand that Peter Drucker said, and I believe almost everything Peter Drucker says, was his comment that companies' core activities are only two things, and that is marketing and innovation. And I was like, that's crazy. What? Marketing, like advertising and innovation? Well, of course, I then learned Drucker used the real word of marketing. Marketing has since been co-opted into advertising. That's not the original meaning of marketing. Marketing in the business trade meant going out and finding what customers need. It's all about customers. That's why I think my second favorite Harvard Business Review article of all time is Marketing Myopia by Ted Levitt. It's over 50 years old now, and I read it a couple of times every year, and it's all about customers, and the stories in there are great. By the way, it's the second most favorite because all of Drucker's articles in Harvard Business Review are my first favorite. But look, if you're going to be successful as an organization, you have to both market, figure out what people want, and then innovate, be willing to change to meet their needs. And there's all these stories, of course, of famous leaders of organizations, CEOs, board chairs, future CEOs who figured out, nope, the market's going in this direction and we've got to change to meet it. And that's what strategy involves. Now, as I say that, some of you are listening and probably going, Mark, that seems like something outside of my purview. I don't know if I could do that. Well, I would say this, you're right to wonder, and maybe you are not naturally a strategic thinker, but I will tell you, it's as simple as none of those people who did the things they did that were so impressive knew that they were right. Now, Steve Jobs is portrayed as if he knew because he was so adamant and so fiery about it to the point of berating his employees and so on. But he didn't know because nobody knows the future. It's entirely possible that the iPhone could have been a bust. But that was their strategy. It turned out to be a very successful strategy. And by the way, BlackBerry's strategy didn't work so well for them. They poo-pooed the iPhone's digital keyboard and so on. In fact, I waited a couple of months before I bought one. I think I waited till late August or something because I wasn't certain I was all that excited about a virtual keyboard. because I was so in love with my Palm Trio or Palm 650 or whatever. Palm Trio 650.
I love the Palm Trio. I love my BlackBerry. Oh, yeah.
But I still have one.
I think executives and managers engage in strategy-like behaviors way more often than they give themselves credit for. It's like, I mean, just personally, like back many, many years ago in my IT world, I had large mainframe systems that I was responsible for. Big, large mainframe system. And at some point, it became very clear to me that client server was going to be a thing, that PCs were going to be a thing, and everybody would have them on their desk. It wouldn't be dumb terminals. And so I'm not saying I'm a great strategic wizard, but guess what? I started developing internally skills around client server. I created an organization before it was a fad to start to learn how to do this, because I thought at some point I was going to be asked, or the IT organization would be asked to do this, and I wanted to be the one that could do it.
Yes. So this is a great example of strategy. It was strategic thinking at your level. And in fact, when you started talking about client server, I'm reminded of a phrase that I bet you, if you're under the age of 45, probably, you've never heard this phrase. But everybody over 45, and Mike and I are 65. Actually, Mike is, you're now 66, right?
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, you're 66. You're welcome. I'll be 66 in August. Okay. Thin client.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do.
All of it would be done on the server, and you have a thin client at your desk, which, by the way, thin meant cheap, and CEOs and CFOs loved the idea of thin client.
Absolutely. Think a web browser, which is really kind of the thin client of today, to be honest.
Exactly. It is. So what Mike just described there, guys, was a strategic insight. And it goes to one of the bullets in our Effective Executive Conference that is one of my top 10 favorite bullets. And to be fair, I actually wrote this one. I mean, I write all of our documents, but this one really felt like I really hit the nail on the head, which was strategy is a process of making internal decisions today that affect external results tomorrow. And that's exactly what Mike did. He says, no, I see this coming. I'm going to prepare for it. That's a strategic insight. So if you're thinking back and say, well, what Mike did, I kind of did with my marketing team or my ops team or my IT team or my whatever, my sales team, then you've got enough insight.
Yeah, you've done it. My external focus were my customers, my internal customers. I didn't have external customers, really. My internal customers. So at some point, your customers become external to your company. Now you're doing strategies.
That's a great way to describe it. I've never thought of it that way. Exactly right. Now I want to tell you, we're only going over this at a high level, so we only have a few paragraphs here, but I went off on a couple of tangents. Now I want to tell you the thing that nobody thinks about, but I want everybody to know. The first thing I would say that I want you to know is you can do it, okay? And that's a good thing, and we'll help you, okay? But the second thing, and this is wrapped up in the whole riddle inside of a mystery inside of enigma that strategy is. When the business press covers a strategic insight, what they don't cover is all the things that came between the insight internally today that led to the change in external results tomorrow. Strategy is not simply the setting of goals for the future, which will then be determined tactically later through a massive cascade of deliverables and so on. No. A modern, effective strategy today includes not only those future goals, you know, we're going to start selling oil we're going to start selling gasoline, which was an incredible strategic insight, as opposed to kerosene for oil lamps. I still think it's funny that kerosene that was used in lamps between the 19th and the 20th century.
Yeah, I'm old. I'm 66, so I remember kerosene.
Right, you remember that. You know, most people don't know this. You know what kerosene is also used for? Jet fuel. What jets use is kerosene. Imagine, people were lighting their homes with jet fuel. You wonder why there weren't more fires. There were plenty, of course. So, I'm sorry, I went on that tangent. But a modern, effective strategy includes not only the future goals, which obviously implies certain direction, but included in the strategy. It's not left to somebody else. It's not left to an operations team. Included in the strategy are also the detailed steps necessary to achieve the strategy.
Yeah, that's the key. People miss that a lot.
They don't get it.
It's critical.
And that's why the mystery is bad, because deliverables drip down, but people don't understand that that deliverable they're being asked to provide to somebody is part of the process of the change in the company. And this is a massive failure in internal communications. It's why Horstmann's law of organizational communication exists, which is say something seven times and half your people will tell you they heard it once. Well, if you're not talking about regular things, but two or three times, nobody's going to hear it. If you don't talk about strategy at all, not only is nobody going to hear it, nobody will understand that they're a part of it. Folks, strategy is not just where you are going, but it's also a detailed plan. And I'm talking about daily deliverables for how you're going to get there. That's it. It's both. It's we're going northwest, and here's the exact route we're going to take, and here's we're going to reach this city, and this city, and this city, and this city. Okay, now, I'm going to get off my high horse for a minute. If that's all you get out of this podcast, I'll be ecstatic, because most of you who are listening are really good at deliverables. So that part of strategy, you're good at. And by the way, there'll be some stuff you don't know, and you'll have to figure it out. And the better your external network is, the easier it will be for you to figure it out, by the way.
Imagine every manager in your organization using the same playbook. Manager Tools doesn't just train individuals. We partner with organizations. Our effective manager and communicator and effective hiring manager trainings can be delivered across your company for consistent leadership behaviors and measurable results. Less confusion, better execution, stronger culture. Explore our training solutions by reaching out to us today at customerservice@manager-tools.com.
I just want to mention a couple other things relative to strategy. And again, we're going to do operations and people here in just a minute as well. But generally, senior leadership is responsible for the strategy system in most organizations. By strategy system now, not just strategy, but strategy system, we mean the way each individual organization goes about the creation of its strategy. Its meetings, its cadence, its attendees, the ground rules, the outputs, communications. And look, there are thousands of different strategy systems, again, ways of creating strategy, in existence. There are probably only 10 or so that comprise the processes of 90% of the companies of the Fortune 1000. And in fact, if you come to our Effective Executive Conference, we have an addendum in the back of the deck that we provide you, which lists the most popular, I hate using that word, let's say this, I don't believe they'd be popular unless they were effective. So the most effective in terms of modern usage today of approaches to strategy or strategy systems. Michael Porter is in there. Blue Ocean Strategy is in there. There's a bunch more as well. We actually teach a specific strategy system, and your company may not use it. By the way, that doesn't mean that you couldn't use our recommendation in your part of your organization. Although I would say if I were your trusted colleague, I would say ideally you should use the one that your company uses, because that way you'll become used to the rhythm of the company's strategy process while you're doing your own strategy. And as I said before, I'm going to say it again, this strategy system, despite its importance, is sadly often cloaked in secrecy, and that leads to all kinds of strategic failures due to lack of communication, and therefore failure to get alignment across the organization, and the block men die in unstrategic defiance of martial law because used to just being men and not block parts.
Yeah. I just add one thing. I think most people listening, executives listening, certainly probably don't make this mistake, but the vast majority of people who are not involved in the process talk about a strategy as if the important thing is the strategy document that gets published at the end of the process, where the important thing for executives is the strategy process.
The thing that leads
to the quality of that strategy.
Yeah. Okay. So that's our take on strategy for now. To satisfy those of you who have been writing me and say, hey, wait a minute, Mark, you did one-on-ones and feedback and coaching delegation in the first 6 months of Manager Tools. Yes, yes, I know. And we're now going to do that for strategy operations and people. We'll have other casts in there spread throughout. But we just wanted to give it to you at a high level. And we're going to detail an entire process, soup to nuts, with agendas for you in Exec Tools podcast over the course of the next couple of years for how to do strategy.
There you go. And folks, if you can't wait to know this, there is an effective executive conference coming up in just a couple of weeks that you could go to and learn all this stuff.
Yeah. In fact, people ask me every once in a while, well, why are you doing the podcast if you're doing effective executive? I said, wait a minute. There are some people who won't be able to afford the effective executive. It's only $8,000 for 2 days, and you get to be a part of a cohort for 6 months. And the cohort, I think that's the real kicker of the value. We've got a couple of cohorts. The first cohort from a year ago is still going on. They're still meeting. We only agreed to 6 months, but they're still going on. But yeah, you can get it here. It takes a long time, or you can get it in 2 days. And in fact, two organizations out of the first conference, Wally Budgell and Mo Podrego, both hired me to facilitate their strategic sessions. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet. All right. So I just had to mention that because somebody wants it now. I know, guys. I know you want it because I was you. I wanted it right away. So yeah. There you go. There's your answer.
The other thing about that is we have to fund our operations. So it's good when people come to our conferences.
Yeah, there you go. It helps. Okay, so that's strategy. We got two more to get through. Operations. Talk about operations.
Yeah.
The second part. Are these in any particular order?
Oh, no. It's always strategy, operations, people.
Is that in level priority, or it's like three legs of a tripod?
No, three legs of a tripod.
All right.
Strategy comes first because it's about the future. Operations comes second because it's about the current. And you have to run a successful organization. It has to be profitable or meet your goals or whatever. And people comes last simply because it's the engine of the other two. That's why it's done that way.
Good. All right. So people don't take this as like people's last in your,
you don't have to worry about people.
Yeah. I'm joking. People listening here are not going to do that for sure.
Yeah. It's funny because people joke about how companies say people are our most important asset. And then it's become cynical and they treat them like crap. In fact, if every single employee could experience how high potential, high performance, mid-level to higher level executives are treated as a precious asset, there would be no turnover in organizations.
Yeah. No, agreed.
Unfortunately, companies haven't figured out how to scale that.
All right. We're driving people crazy because we keep on talking about operations next, and then we go off on some tangent. Okay. So operations.
Yeah. So you'll hear us most frequently call it the operations system. In some cases, people will call it the operating system. I mean, companies actually call it, here's our operating system. When they say operating system, they don't mean strategy, operations, and people all together. I prefer that the operating system of large organizations is the three, but because operating and operations are sort of close, I just want to make that distinction for you. So the operations system, how you run your organization, are the interconnected systems of task and deliverable assignment, tracking of work status, the tying of financial results to operational outcomes, and the cadence, reporting, and communication activities that help an organization action and control its current daily, weekly, monthly, and quarterly activities. It's how your company runs. The operations system is where the vast majority of you spend the vast majority of your time. This is why people say to us all the time, yeah, I don't need any help in operations. Actually, in many cases you do, because you don't understand what the state of the art is. You're just doing what your company does. Dan McGuire, our good friend and co-presenter at the Effective Executive Conference, whose company is called Arcturus Advisory Services, often points out that operations system activities are where executives get captured. So much so, I changed a slide based on Dan's input, which I rarely do. I think the only people who have ever convinced me to change a slide are Mike and Dan. The vast majority of you listening right now spend the vast majority of your time working in the operations space. What's due? What do I have to do? How do I deliver on my weekly, daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly objectives? There's always a project running behind, right? There's a budget getting blown for a bad decision a while ago or a misunderstanding regarding contract cost, an initiative not getting enough attention, a project manager not knowing how to manage a project and leading and so on. You know, Dan and I had a conversation. He said, you know, it might be safe to say that the operation system is what most managers and executives think of as work. That's what you do, okay? But hopefully you're having a little light go on in the back of your head, right? That, oh yeah, he's right. That's where I spend most of my time on that. Well, that's only a third of the equation, folks. That's why we're going through this. And Mike, I got to tell you, unless we go to weekly, this is going to take us 2 years. I really do. But look, to be fair, your company has to run. I don't care if your strategy is great and your people are great. It has to run profitably. You have to manufacture products efficiently. Products have to be sold effectively. Invoices must be created. They have to be transmitted. You got to receive payments. Bills have to be paid. Status meetings got to occur. Products got to be shipped. Quality standards must be met. And on and on and on and on. If we were to ask any manager anywhere in any part of any organization that we know of, there's a couple of exceptions, what is it you do here? What do you spend your time on? The responses, we believe, would create a picture of their contribution to the operations system. And for the record, guys, there's multiple different operation systems, how companies operate. They generally have industrial lines, in other words, different operating or operation systems depending upon the industry you're in. But we will share with you our recommended operations system. And I will tell you, it's the easiest of three. I'm not saying it's the easiest three to implement. I'm not saying there won't be political headwinds because your company already has a way of operating. It's the easiest of three. And I will tell you that it's, interestingly enough, it's probably the place where technological systems can do you the most good. The digital dashboards, the reporting of stuff that goes yellow and red and so on. It's not hard to do these things. And again, I know you're thinking about corporate, but you can implement your own operations system in your own part of the organization. And frankly, if you spend a 30-year career, if you're just starting a career and you spend a 30-year career in one place, when you're a manager, you can have your own operation system. Yeah, it has to work with the corporate companies. I get that. Okay. When you become a director, you can ask all of your direct report managers to use your operation system. When you become a VP, you can have your part of the organization doing that as well. And you can get all the way to the top of the company. And that company can use your operations system. If you come as a VP to a president or a COO of another company, you leave one company and go to another company, you can bring your operation system with you and transform organizations.
Okay. And last but not least, as we talked about earlier, people.
People, yeah. Now, I'm going to start off with a bit of a prediction here, which we don't do very often, but I'm going to tell you guys something that I just told Mike and Sarah in our weekly board meeting, operations board meeting. This morning, I had the single best coaching call I've ever had in my entire career. 30 years of coaching managers and executives. This one was the best. And it was not because I've gotten better. It was because my client, Krzysztof Babanin in Poland, gave me the most impressive answer to his approach to the people system of anyone I've ever heard. So much so I got goosebumps multiple times. So I'm dedicating this portion of this cast to Krzysztof.
We need to get him on a podcast.
We're going to have him in Exec Tools. We're going to do a guest podcast, which is very rare. maybe five times we've done it in 20 years across. I mean, technically, when I think about it, Mike, we've been doing exec tools for almost 4 years. Well, count it as 2 years weekly, right? Because we've been bi-weekly. And then we did 17 years of career tools and 20 years of manager tools. So we've been doing 40 years worth of podcasts and we've had less than 10 guests. And I assume you still get the emails that I get that say, hey, Mark, I've got a guy who wrote a book who'd be really great to be a guest on your podcast. And I wrote back, dear Bob, thank you for your inquiry. We have never had guests on our show, not career tools, not manager tools, not exec tools, never have, never will. Now, the first one I sent out, I added an extra line, which is if you had listened to even one of our podcasts, you would know that.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a little too poke in the eye, so I took that off. And then I sign off with best wishes in your endeavors.
Yeah. I just love the ones where I'm a big fan, been listening forever. And I want you to have a guest on your podcast to talk about their book. It's like, no
you lying son of a buckethead. No. You are not a big fan. No. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about people. If the operation system is where most of us spend our time and strategy is where senior leaders, but of course you can do that in your little neck of the woods. If that's where senior leaders chart our future, the people system is the set of activities, official activities, that identify, develop, promote, evaluate, and reward the individuals in the organization that play a significant role in its success. The best managed companies in the world over long periods of time, and sorry, Silicon Valley notwithstanding, are able to do so by a rigorous process, I mean rigorous, of personnel competency reviews, planning for helping managers and leaders achieve their maximum potential. The companies I most admire pay special attention to the people system. Executives at the very top are familiar, I mean familiar with 1 to 200 managers and executives at the top of their organization. They discuss those people's performance once or twice a year. They determine development paths for them. So the organization will have exceptional leaders with the right skills in all the right jobs in the future. You know, there's a great saying. I'm sure I read it years ago, but I've forgotten it. And then I was reminded of it the other day. A society becomes great when its oldest members, its executives, plant trees in the shade of which they will not sit. I just love that. Mm. Like, dudes, that's why Mike and I are still doing this. We believe that people 50 years, long after we're gone, will still be benefiting from our work. And at your company, in your organization, if you're an executive, or if you aspire to be an executive, you have to find the people that are as good or better than you, and you have to help them grow. And this brings us to the saddest part of this cast. The people system is an equal part of the executive trinity, yet it is the most likely to be ignored. I'll never forget reading In Execution by Larry Bossidy. And by the way, if you want a book that echoes all this, read Execution, because I worked with Larry Bossidy and Jack Welch years ago and saw them have these systems over and over and over again. And then it's funny, people at GE and Honeywell and Allied Signal and so on would go on to manage other companies. And within 2 years, guess what they had? They had strategy, operations, and people. It's literally cultural adaptation. It's absolutely fantastic. And the good ones always spent time on people. In fact, in the book, Bossidy said he was talking to this guy, and it was time to get ready for their semi-annual session C, I think. And he says, oh, God, I hate this people thing. And this executive who reported to Bossidy turned and says, you don't get it, do you? You don't get it. This is it. This is the thing. This is not a chore. This is a core of what we do. We have to operate the company. We have to lead the company, obviously, into the future with strategy. But this is how we are going to get to the future, by people other than us. And if you don't get it, you don't belong in this area. He went on to say in the book that this guy did, in fact, do an okay job in the future, So much so that Bossidy really couldn't fault him for it. But he said Bossidy didn't believe that the guy really ever got it. That if you're running a large organization, you're supposed to know who the next generation of leaders are. You're supposed to know it. It's supposed to be common discussion. Yes, it's confidential. Now, look, operations is always going to be addressed because, again, invoices have to go out and products have to be made and capital has to be spent on improvements to our manufacturing facility, whatever. So operations is always going to get handled, and therefore it's the capture device for most of us. And strategy usually happens in some way, but often it's poor, it's poorly done. But the sad thing is the people system doesn't happen at all at many companies, except maybe in quiet headquarters conversations where people feel like they're moving chess pieces around, which is not really a people system. And those companies are never going to grow.
Outstanding. Okay. So we have one more thing we want to talk about,
right?
Which is, guys and gals, you don't get a pass. Yeah.
You don't get a promotion.
You don't get promoted till you no longer have to do one-on-ones or feedback or coaching or delegation. All that stuff still applies.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason Mike says that is some execs, when we have discussed the executive trinity with them and have sort of scratched their heads about its relationship to the management trinity. And it's easy to understand why. The management trinity and the executive trinity comprise different components designed to achieve different things. But yes, they're both a trinity. The manager tools trinity, or the management trinity, comprises specific managerial behaviors designed to make the manager effective against her responsibilities of results and retention. Effective managers use the tools in the trinity to manage their team, achieve their responsibilities, again, results and retention. But the executive trinity comprises organizational systems, which executives are responsible for, and which executives use to essentially run the entire company. But here's the kicker. In addition to their managerial duties, which they apply to their own directs and own organization, the two trinities, or these two systems, in fact, the executive trinity systems, comprises three subsystems: strategy, operations, and people. But the two trinities have two different sets of deliverables addressing the two different qualitative responsibilities of each executive. So what that means for you, for managers who use the manager tools trinity, is that you have to continue to use it to make them your people effective against the tactical responsibilities as a organizational leader at the sub-organizational level. And then you also have to employ the executive trinity to perform your role as a total organizational leader. So just keep that in mind. You're going to always do the manager tools trinity. You're setting an example of how you want people to be managed, and you're also addressing development and performance and relationships and trust and so on. And I think some people, Mike, I've had some conversations where it was very clear to me the assumption that was unstated was, okay, now I don't have to do manager tools trinity. I don't have to do the management trinity anymore. I'm an executive now, so I just do these three big systems. No, everybody who's an executive, with rare exception, there are some, you know, fellows or principal engineers or chief scientists that don't have any directs because they don't know how to manage, and they're executives. And they're involved in strategy, obviously, and potentially operations, and definitely people, but they don't use the manager tools trinity because they haven't been given directs. But for the vast majority of executives, you have directs, and they have directs, and they have directs. And so that means you're going to be doing both.
Yeah. Great thing about this is with the manager tools trinity and the executive trinity, you always have an answer to the young, recent college graduate who ask you because they don't know. Like, we're doing all the work. What do you do? Now, you can answer the question of that precocious young, almost teenager.
Yeah. I'll tell you something else. If some precocious young teenager, 20-year-old, fresh college graduate, asked me that, what do I do? What do you do, Mark? I'd say, I carry the burden of responsibility for the entire organization.
There you go.
They won't understand it, but it would have been a correct answer.
I give speeches. There's some history to that, folks.
Oh, yeah, I give speeches, yeah. Okay, so let me summarize, because it's a two-parter and we've gone long here. There is a management trinity, as we said, which lays out the most effective behaviors for managers to meet their tactical responsibilities and their subpart of the organization. But folks, there's also an executive trinity, which lays out how the entire team of executive leaders meets its strategic responsibilities and its future responsibilities for the entire organizations. These two trinities are both necessary and sufficient for you and the organization. They simplify the manager's work and they magnify the executive's capabilities.
Pretty exciting stuff. I'm looking forward to the next many months of covering this in more detail. It's going to be great.
Yeah. I don't know if I told you, Mike, somebody wrote me after the first part of this cast and said, I could tell how joyous you guys were because we were finally getting to it.
Great stuff. All right, my friend.
Thanks, partner.
Thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next time. So long.